afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name's Erin Ryan.
That was weird. Yeah, that was me talking to me.
I was looking right at you, and I didn't see your lips
like,
move.
Whoa.
It's amazing.
I was a little late on I was a little late on the grab, but I thought, how did that happen?
There was some technical issues. I'm sorry for this inconvenience, but we have a live show today.
Oh, sure we do. Hey, next time we do a replay, let's do it like that. Oh, no, this is live. It is. Wink, wink. You can't see winks over the radio. That's great. So I'm Erin Ryan in recording and in real life.
In real life, yes.
That's usually more than most people want.
My name's Bill Kendiff, and our sponsor this morning is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Right now, you can get a great deal on a new tractor, mower, implements. They got it all up there. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call. Phone number is 530-226-9226. Or go to the web at papemachinery.com. There you go. So what are you doing over there, weather girl?
It felt like we were in Florida. it's hot in here, hot and shreddy. That's probably why I was being recorded. They were afraid I was going to pass out. They thought they'd use my fake self. So let's see. Today is October 22nd, 2023, because we will replay this show at a future time, which just brings back that whole time traveling thing. But this is part of our series that we have been doing with Paul Skinner from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He's a member of Team Adam, and his professional experience of 4 decades working in municipal policing and working in the criminal justice system in the prosecution of offenders. He's a graduate of the FBI National Academy, where he majored in the management of cold case investigations. Additionally, he has experience as an adjunct instructor for Humphreys University, teaching criminal justice students in advanced, complicated investigations. I would think all of them are complicated, but apparently there's some that are more complicated even, extra complicated. As a member of Team Adam, Paul brings experience in the areas of cold case investigations, spatial behavior of offenders, and the prosecution of no-body homicide cases. We have not discussed those yet, but that's in the offing. So the first program we did was August 6th of this year, and we kind of talked about the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And from the people that I ran into after the show, so many people said, okay, I had no idea what you were talking about, and then I realized I see the logo everywhere. So apparently we all know more about it than we thought. Then on September 17th, there was a focus on the exploited children, so the Exploitation of Children program. I would really encourage you, if you missed it, to go back and listen to it. It was super interesting, and it affects kids that you know, nieces, nephews, your children, grandkids. It's a really wide subject, and people think, oh, well, none of this is going to have anything to do with, you know, my kid. We kind of learned it's going to have something to do with everybody's kid if we're not careful. So those are tagged on the website at wethepeopleradio.us, so they're on there commercial-free. They're free to listen to. You can share them with anybody. We're not copyright people, so you can just do whatever you want. We're doing this to educate the public. So today's focus is on missing children.
You know, you said the good old days when kids used to play outside and wait till the streetlights came on. I saw a picture the other day online of a bunch of kids playing out in the street, and it was almost dark, and you could see the the streetlights popping on, and gosh, anymore, you just don't see that. You can't let your kids go out and play until dark, unattended.
I saw a kid. Where was I? I was waiting for something, and I looked over, and here from out from behind a fence came a kid who was probably 5 pushing a kid in a stroller who was probably 1, and they were just happily going on down the street. And I'm looking everywhere for adults, and I thought, yeah, I don't know. I was kind of having a little.
Well, it was last night when he almost hit a kid in the middle of the street. I mean,
yeah, it was a cat. Bill's like, it looked just like a kid.
It was a white cat. I swear to God, it was almost 3 feet tall, and it was right in the middle of the street, and the headlights hit it, and I'm like, look out! It was a cat.
Had he been, and it was, been drinking?
And it was white. I mean, it was a white, white cat. I'm like, is our neighborhood riddled with albino midgets these days?
Like, can you say midgets? I don't think so.
Is that a thing?
Just oh, my like, goodness.
It's a cat. Wow. So, yeah, on that on that note. All right, so today's focus is missing. And that is... He's actually given us notes today. We're cheating. Just, you know, full disclosure here.
A lot of good they're doing.
Yeah. a lot of good the notes are doing. Here, you can have half the notes. I've got the other half. No, but, you know, the thing is, I think people have figured this out by now. I mean, heck, we've been doing this a while. Honestly, there is so much stuff that we all don't know. And so if you're going to have people come on and talk about it and you have to be an expert before you bring them on,
yeah, good luck.
You're going to do a show about nothing every week because you're just going to talk about, you know, the little tiny bit of information in the world you have. So I guess it's the 20th anniversary of Team Atom.
It is.
And so, okay, we didn't ever ask you this before, but I'm kind of curious. So what's the deal with Team Atom in the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children? Because they are two different things, but they work together? Is
no,
that the deal?
We're actually a part of NCMEC,
okay.
An integral part of NCMEC. There's 158 of us throughout the U.S. We are responsible by congressional mandate to respond to cases where law enforcement needs us to provide additional resources for them for the investigation. And Team Atom was established 20 years ago as a result, unfortunately, of John and Reeve Adams missing their child or losing their child at a mall in Florida. He was unfortunately found later on deceased. And it was readily identified that there was a problem coordinating local law enforcement organizations and making sure that information was clear and concise and got throughout the region involving missing children. So at the time, John contacted then President Reagan and explained the problem. And President Reagan said, we will fix that. And within 2 weeks... he had legislation in front of Congress establishing NCMEC. And part of NCMEC is Team Atom. We are all retired homicide investigators, forensic odontologists, forensic anthropologists, and analysts. And we're, like I said, we're scheduled throughout the United States. Most of us have a very broad footprint for our response area that we respond to local agency calls for service or for assistance. And then the best part about this organization for me is that if I have an issue that comes up, like a child's jawbone, unfortunately, is found someplace, I have a direct resource, a forensic odontologist I go to directly, and that answer comes within 5 to 10 minutes. So
wow.
It's not
wow, that's
a,
quick.
It's not a matter of having to go to send it to a lab and all those types of activities. So and this is a group I'm extremely proud to be part of. My interest was in working cold cases in retirement, and I came across NCMEC, and I could not believe the professionals that I met through this association. So it's our 20th anniversary. We're excited to be here. We actually have some Team Atom members that were original Team Atom members that are search and rescue experts, and they are phenomenal. And the one thing that I appreciate about my fellow TACs, we're called as Team Atom consultants, is that they're available 24/7. So it's not uncommon for me to make a phone call at 5 a.m. to a TAC saying, hey, you are listed as an expert in disposal site searches. I have an agency that's asking some questions that I can't answer. Can you help us out? Can we marry up the phone calls or marry up the FaceTime calls for that? So we're really excited. It's a growing organization. Team Atom is a growing organization. We grow very slowly, but very carefully because we're looking for people that have a specific job orientation and specific skills that combined with everybody else creates this beautiful stew of fantastic people that are willing to do anything for anybody else. Mm-hmm. And
are these people all retired or?
They are.
They okay.
Are. They're all retired.
Can you be on it if you're not retired?
You can, but
your flexibility
unfortunately, flexibility is a problem.
Yeah.
And NCMEC's really careful about making sure that we don't create a problem for family or create a problem for somebody's occupation. But the one of the things I really appreciate about it is that we have, as our organizations, we have official mottos, but our motto for Team Adam, our unofficial motto, is "You call, we haul."
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And that's really exciting because if I have a case involving Indian country where there's a missing child that may be involved in a non-parental abduction situation, I call my Indian expert who knows who to call to make sure that I don't have any problems when we start interviewing people.
Sure. So what is the process if a child is missing? Run through that. How is it that you get involved with that?
We usually get involved when law enforcement contacts us.
Okay.
So, like, for example, here in Shasta County, the detectives know who I am. They know how to get a hold of me, and we communicate back and forth, and we also attend some of the same trainings. So there's face-to-face knowledge as far as that goes. But also when there's a missing case and law enforcement contacts NCMEC will offer our services. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just a matter of phone call where I call the agency and say, hey, you reported this person missing. Here's the resources that I have readily available. These are the resources that are standing by for you. I just need some notice in order to get those resources going.
So they've got a phone number that law enforcement would call. Depending on where it is, they would dispatch the experts from that area or inform them and let them take it from there. Is that how it's?
Yes. A little bit more complicated than that. There's an initial report made and a case manager is assigned in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
And that case manager will reach out to one of us if they think it's something that Team Adam should get involved in.
Okay.
Then there's the unofficial way. And you know how business is done. You have the official way of doing business, the unofficial way of business.
Mm-hmm.
So I can tell you very safely that for every official call I get from Arlington, Virginia, I probably get 25 calls from local agencies saying, hey, Skins, let me run this by you. Is this something you guys can help with, or is this something that we should even be involved with?
Yeah. It's nice to have somebody local you can call because you know them and you're going to get the information probably quicker.
It is.
Yeah.
And then I can be deployed even quicker because I know the deployment phone call is coming and I've already spoke with the investigator. So it's kind of a roundabout communication system.
Right. Well, that's good.
You want to talk about anything in your missing event? Recent missing event?
I do.
It's on the list.
I know it's on the list. I think I put it on there.
In really big print, thanks.
I did. I had the privilege to participate in a Missing in California event on the 7th of October at California State University, Sacramento. And this event was sponsored by the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department and the Missing Unidentified Persons section of Department of Justice. I wasn't sure what to expect. I knew we were going to put up a display. I knew that we had tables and we had information for people who have lost children that haven't been recovered. But I wasn't sure what was going to happen. When I arrived, I was pleasantly shocked, surprised, and ultimately pleased. We had 65 police detectives from different departments there.
Wow.
All online with their own departments. There were people there from other law enforcement organizations and DNA laboratories, and there were people there from the court process. We were there. NCMEC was there, along with NAMIS, and we'll talk about NAMIS in a few minutes. DOJ MUPS, which is the Department of Justice Missing and Unidentified Persons. The group out of Oregon you've probably read about that will check waterways for missing children and missing adults that don't charge any money for this. They just do it gratis. They were there. CHP NTRAC was there, which is the portion of CHP that puts out the amber alerts, the silver alerts, those alerts that you see was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the purpose of the event was that families of missing children or missing adults could come in and either report them missing, which I kind of raised an eyebrow when I heard that. I thought, you mean people don't
just like walk in?
Yeah.
It turns out that's true. There were several reports of people that were missing that had never been either through a family miscommunication or some other type of of glitch in the family structure.
So these probably would have been primarily adults that were missing.
That particular category. And then we had families that were going to be coming in that wanted updates on the cases involving children to see what had been done. And those law enforcement organizations who were present had those cold cases with them and was able to update them and give them some information on what had taken place. They wanted updates. If they wanted information, they could get updates on where we stand now from a technological standpoint. You know, we're collecting all kinds of biometrics now. Before, it was just fingerprints. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at DNA. Now we're looking at mitochondrial DNA. And this, it seems like every month or so we get a new breakthrough. And so some of those old cases need to be reviewed again and taken a look at. So families were encouraging. A particular note, my partner in Sacramento had asked that NetMec produce a poster of the missing children, long-term missing cases in California. And so we had a poster of that, and it was quite a large poster. And we had families coming up, touching the child's picture. And just weeping.
Yeah.
Because they knew nothing about the status of their child.
Right.
They just knew their child was missing, and it was a long-term case.
What's considered, I mean, everything's long-term when your child's missing, but when you say long-term, what are you talking? How many years?
Well, let me go to my notes.
Oh.
So usually any case that's over 326 days will classify as long-term. So this event was unbelievably powerful. The investigators left renewed. Felt like they had been there, and it was a good event. And they, through acting with other investigators and running cases by other investigators, they came up with new ideas. I would see investigators talking with each other and then stopping, grabbing their notebook, and frantically writing something down. We had investigators come up to us and ask us questions about GPR. You know, do you have access to ground penetrating radar? Do you know agencies that have used it? Do you know where we can get it, where we can rent it? Will you pay for that service?
And great question.
So it was a great, great day, and I left there just feeling like, wow, it was worth the drive.
That's awesome, because you would think it might be, you know, kind of feel like you were the speed bag.
Yeah. But it was an amazing event, and it was put together. And this is going to be something that they'll probably be doing either on an annual or every other year basis. But what a great event. Everything that happens that happened at that event had a follow-up attached to it somehow.
So it wasn't just like we brought everybody in, told them, hey, we're still looking, and just sent them all home.
No, it wasn't like that at all.
That's really nice because you would think, like, I don't know. I mean, if these are really, you know, super long-term cases. We have to take a quick break here. Our clocks are all different. We haven't even had the time change yet, and yet all the clocks in here are different. And I just want you to know it's not me. You seem to, right, Bill? Oh, wait. That's it. Bill thought a cat was a child, so forget that.
It was a big cat. It had a white coat on.
A super big cat. A white furry face, too. He's not qualified for Team Adam, is he? That's a disqualifier.
Just a little bit of training.
He's more than qualified, yes.
Oh, my gosh. All right. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Double wide quick stop, midnight tea top, Jack in her cherry coke town. Mama and daddy put their roots right here, cause this is where the car broke down. Yellow dog school bus, kicking up red bus, picking us up by a barbed wire fence. MTV on the RCA, no AC in the vents. We were Jesus, Sammy, blue jean baby, born in the USA. Trailer park, truck stop, faded little map dots, New York to L.A. We were teenage dreaming, front seat leaning, baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kids. Growing up in little pink houses, making...
Hi, this this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
That's why they came to the event.
That's
why they came to the event.
And that's why the investigators came to the event.
Yeah.
The investigators, and so just so your audience understands, when you hear the phrase, a cold missing case involving a child, what that really means is a case where all investigative leads have been vetted, but somebody still has that case. And that somebody is usually the missing persons investigator who has already read that case from cover to cover and is poised like a lion ready to
count. Yeah, they basically just have to wait for new information.
Yes,
or
waiting
or
for new lead, information or technology or a call from the prison system saying, hey, so-and-so
or somebody has to mention something and it's like, hey, wait a second, that sounds like – you know, somebody gets arrested for something else or somebody's a witness in something else and –
And you have people that always want to negotiate with the government and try to get cases reduced.
Oh, that's true, too.
And so for that, they want to offer information. So there's really no such thing as a cold case, but that's a media representation.
Sure.
Somebody owns that case in that police department. Or
well,
that
you said on the break there was one case that guy was the eighth investigator?
Yes. Yeah. One of the investigators I talked to, I took a look and I saw that he had a large file box, a banker's file box. And I said, man, that looks like an extensive case. And he goes, dude, that is one of six boxes. And I said, you've read them all? And he says, oh, yeah, I've read them all. I dream about them.
No. Well, the other seven people are still dreaming about them.
The first seven guys are probably still thinking of it.
Yeah. And he says, I've had to go back and re-interview or interview those other investigators to say, did you consider DNA at the time, and the answer is DNA what? We had no idea what DNA was when this investigation started. So it's a tough situation. But like I said, these people and I left from there invigorated about what we're doing and the fact that we are making inroads. It seems like every week we're seeing another cold case that's been made by DNA, which is great. Now that we're looking at mitochondrial DNA and how we can get those samples from mitochondrial DNA, you'll see that will start to amplify a little bit more.
Now, do you have a list, like if you're going to run mitochondrial, is there a set list of companies that are signed up to provide that information, or do you have to contact every one of them every time to send that DNA out or look for it, I should say?
Well, once DNA is examined, it's coded. Mm-hmm. And so that coding remains static.
Right.
So it's not like it has to be reexamined each time.
But you have to inform these DNA companies that, hey, can we search your data bank?
What you mean.
Yeah.
Those companies are amazing. Their whole direction is we will do anything we can to solve a missing child case.
Right.
And so on those occasions where their legal department says, gee, we prefer a search warrant or a subpoena.
Right.
No problem. No problem. Because you're not invading anybody's personal space.
Right.
You're just asking for records. And so it's great. And I was sharing with Aaron at the break. As a result of that question about the ground-penetrating radar, there were several people that I was able to invite to a one-hour class that we did online on GPR. And it was a great class, and everybody really felt like they understood both the strengths and limitations of using GPR for trying to locate either a clandestine gravesite or a place where somebody may have discarded something of value.
And are there law enforcement agencies that have the equipment to do that, or is there, you have to contact somebody, a private company or whatever?
There are law enforcement organizations that do that. The FBI does that. Department of Justice does that. The larger police departments, LAPD, LASO, will do that. Fortunately for us here in the North State, look at all the electrical work we have done up here all the time.
Oh, yeah, by tons.
PG&E, and PG&E's got a huge GPR program, and PG&E is always willing to help out local issues, especially involving those involving
your child. You look at how much that's true in all these you know, it's not just in the city areas. It's actually mostly in remote areas they're, you know, our rural areas where they're putting in fiber optics and all that stuff.
Yeah, call before
you guys ever
get
lucky on that?
Yeah.
On ground penetrating radar?
Yeah. I mean, do they ever find stuff while they're doing all that? I never even thought about that.
Oh, doing the work. Utility work?
Every so often we'll come across, but it's usually a native artifact of some sort or another.
Oh, okay.
That happens.
Where they kind of go, hey, we found something we didn't know about.
But we will not initiate a GPR investigation until we have something that kind of points to that area of concern. So if you want, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So a gentleman in what's Grass Valley? Is that El Dorado County? Ooh. No, Nevada County. A gentleman in Nevada County is a primary suspect in the disappearance of a 12-year-old female that he was having sexual relations with. The day after she disappeared, he poured a patio in his backyard.
We're all going, okay.
Well, you're
going
to go, again.
Oh, okay.
Patio depth usually is 4 to 6 inches, maybe with a gravel, another 2 inches. This patio depth is 16 inches deep.
Holy mackerel.
And it's got an 8-inch gravel bed underneath it. Why?
Well, I was going to say, what type of patio do you need for that?
Parking on it, a tank?
Yeah, and all it is just a patio. So it's those types of things, those types of investigations, once information is developed, that makes the detective go, whoa, wait a minute. Something's amiss here. I think I want to look underneath here.
What is the maximum depth on that, I mean, that they can see?
I don't know. They were showing us demonstrations of using it on roadways as it approaches a bridge, and they were down 8 feet. Looking at bedrock.
No
so
kidding.
It's kind of interesting, yeah. But,
and what's it? What's it? I know this is like a something better to see than to explain. But what's it look like?
Does it look like a negative or a radar?
I mean, like when you look at like a because what I was picturing, like when you look at a brain scan, like your a scan on your brain kind of looks like your brain sort of looks like asphalt. It's kind of the gray color of asphalt. And where there are spaces, like people who have some kind of a dementia or something, there are holes, and they're the wrong color.
So, okay, your description's right on.
It'll show
a void. There'll be a void. So you'll have a static look.
Yep.
Depending on the soil, or depending on the gravel, or depending on the cement, you'll have a static look, static, 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 and all of a sudden, there's a void.
Yeah.
You know, how do we explain this void? And there's all kinds of explanations for a void.
Right.
But Why is there a void?
Can you
there?
See a thing?
No.
So you don't see a thing?
No.
It's not like you're looking. Oh, look, there's a skull right there.
Yeah, it's just lines that all of a sudden have a different pattern.
Just a void.
Just a different, okay.
Yeah. So
that's what I wondered, because otherwise it sounds like, well, hey, we should just put that everywhere and we'd find all sorts of stuff.
I'll tell you, we got involved in like a four-hour discussion, online discussion, after we completed this one-hour tutorial on it. Going back and forth, going, oh my God, this is so cool. And, you know, has anybody seen this actually work? And how does it manifest itself? And what type of machinery is used? And how big can you go, or how small can you go looking at this kind of thing? So it was a great class. The point is, as a result of that day, we were able to get these investigators into that class with us. Uh-huh. And so now we all have the same level of understanding of GPR and its purpose.
Because it's all about that. It's all about the team.
Oh, it is.
So I would imagine a lot of these old case files, the old cold case, they probably didn't have GPR back then, just like they didn't have a lot of the DNA studies back then. Now they can go back, and if the depression was there, I mean, if there was something there for years and years and years and years, it's still going to show up on that radar, right?
It is, yeah. Great tool. Cool. Yeah. Excellent tool. So we were talking earlier about what are the statistics in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, we have more than 600,000 people go missing per year. That includes both adults and juveniles.
How many?
600,000. And that is a lot.
Is there a time of year? I mean, do we have like a missing season?
No.
Because
there's so many reasons people go missing.
You know,
there's the voluntary missing. There's, you know, of course, the homicide victims and that type of thing.
Alien abduction.
Alien abduction, sure, that happens.
Yeah, children look like cats.
Zombies.
Children being converted into cats.
The other thing that keeps law enforcement busy is there's each year there's more than 4,400 unidentified bodies that turn up. This can be a body that's found in a field. It can be
– That's a lot.
It is a lot. Some are homicide victims. Some are suicide
victims.
So
what do? If they're unidentified, they enter their DNA into the system and then maybe down the road
– Exactly.
It'll match
exactly.
something?
They're unidentified at the time they're discovered, but they start going through the process. Do they have identification on them?
Where are they?
Can we run fingerprints on them? You know, who knows this person? Right. And that's the beauty of local law enforcement. Local law enforcement, a lot of times, will look at the person and go, well, that's so-and-so.
Now
they become in that identified section. But when they stay unidentified, that's where groups like MUPS, the Missing Unidentified Persons Section of Department of Justice, and NAMIS, who mostly deals with those cases that have already gone to the coroner's offices that are unidentified, that's where they jump in and they start doing tattoo analysis and they start looking at teeth and they start looking at bone structure and they start looking at piercings and all those types of things and start comparing those records against jail intake records, prison intake records, any other organization unbelievable.
Just, yeah.
And probably the coolest people ever that solve so many cases at DOJ MUPS are the analysts, the people that are sitting in front of the computer, and they're calling law enforcement agency constantly going, hey, we got your John Doe identified. He is so-and-so out of such and such a place, and here's his identifiers.
Right. Now you've got a direction to go as far as finding out what happened to him.
Yes. Now there's a direction, because if you don't know who the person is,
there's
no direction.
Yeah.
So I'm curious though, like with those people. Okay, so when someone goes, somebody's gone, right? Are you taking DNA from like this? Does the family bring you the hairbrush and stuff like that? Do you put that on file at the time when somebody is missing? Is there a time period where that becomes part of the record?
There is, and I'm glad you asked that question. I think it's on your list.
Oh, it is. Sorry, I didn't read the list.
If it isn't, I neglected to put it on there. So under the way things used to be done.
Oh, no, I just thought of it. It's not on the list.
The way things used to be done, information was golden. Whatever information was presented by the family was considered truthful and taken down. And so that was just the way it was. And that was a societal issue. And as time has gone by and we now have analytical issues where we can collect biometrics and confirm information, confirm statements. It's changed everything. And so it's not uncommon on a missing child case for law enforcement to come into the living arrangement or living area of the child and collect hairbrush, toothbrush, the child's toys, those types of things for DNA analysis, where before that was never done. Before, because it wasn't even known really.
It would ever come into play.
Yeah. The other thing that you'll see now is a complete search of the living house, of the house itself. Complete search, because too many children have been found either alive and hiding someplace in the house after they've called in a bunch of resources to do a,
sure.
a house-by-house check. Or, unfortunately, some children have been found deceased in the house, and that it was either an accidental death or it was a homicide, and the child was being hidden from law enforcement. So there's been some changes in that. A missing child case is investigated very deeply, very thoroughly.
So, time is going so fast today. All right, we've got to take a really quick break. A lot of questions. Bill, you have a lot of questions still?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we've got a lot of questions still.
I'm hanging fire.
Our guest is Paul Skinner. He is with Team Adam from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And you are listening to We the People. You can find this at wethepeopleradio.us.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, or the devil even knows you're there.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. In a recent court case, Freed versus Garland, it was determined both medical and recreational marijuana users have no right to firearms, because marijuana use was associated with elevated risky decision-making. It is beyond dispute that marijuana users experience altered mental states that affect their judgment, creating irrational and unpredictable behavior. There is a clear relationship between the bevy of recent active shooters and marijuana use. Remember, let's be careful out there.
What's the problem? What's the question? What's the answer? Where's this heading? You keep talking, but where's it going?
There's an answer, I don't know it. Please, you're killing me. Please, you're killing me with all these questions.
That's appropriate.
We know that's what you were thinking.
How did you read my mind?
I like snuck up on you there, didn't it? The perfect tagline.
That was good.
Yeah, killing me with all these questions.
That was really good.
Yeah, at the break, we were talking about was it FBI lab or Department of Justice lab? We have one in Reading.
We do. We are really fortunate. Department of Justice in California is phenomenal, and their working attitude with local agencies is basically, what can we do to serve you? Mm-hmm. So they do everything from alcohol analysis, blood alcohol analysis, fingerprint examinations.
They've got to be just as busy as every other lab, too. I imagine
they are. And I was talking to one of their lab people at that event in Sacramento, and I said, so how are you guys doing? She goes, we're doing great. Pause one.
And
we're doing greater if we had 30 more criminalists.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the big issue is a lot of young people are not interested in going into the scientific part of the criminal justice system. And so
you would think that would be big, though.
Oh, you would.
You would think we would be having a nerd fest right now.
Are they actually looking for people to fill those positions?
Constantly. They're actually recruiting in the science departments at the universities. And to work with these people from Department of Justice is a treat you just can't believe, because they are willing to share their knowledge with you. There is no I don't know, in your industry, if you had those people that wouldn't share.
Yeah, the secret squirrel people.
Yeah, they just don't share. No, the Department of Justice MUPS, they'll share everything. They put on trainings all the time. I usually get asked to come to their trainings and spend about an hour talking about what NECMEC and specifically Team Adam can do for the investigators. And that's a time where I see people really taking notes, because when I walk in and say, I'm going to give you something that's free of charge, and I'm going to supplement your staffing on that investigation.
Mm. Yeah.
They pick up their pen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are those analysts, do you find that they find it a very rewarding job, or is it something that just has a lot of frustration attached to it?
In this field, there's two branches of analysts. There's crime analysts that take a look at crimes, when they occur, how they occur. And that group is trying to get into the spatial issue of why criminals go a certain direction when they offend, when they don't offend. On the other side, you have the investigative analysts. And those are the people that if you gave them a shovel, they would just keep digging that hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And so here's an example. We had one person we were looking at. We got a hold of our analyst back in Arlington, and she started looking at open source information on that particular person, everything that's on the internet. And then she kept calling me back saying, I think I can go to this group and find out this information. I think I can do some more on this.
Yeah.
I think he isn't who he says he is. I think he's actually this person who is wanted out of Sudan for a child violation.
I would imagine a lot of that just comes from experience.
Exactly.
I ran into it before. This is what we found.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, we love to call them the cops without the guns because they are they're behind the computer screen. And if you've ever watched, I was trying to get the name of the show.
Criminal Minds, where they play
snazzy
music and then they figure the case out in 5 minutes?
Yes, Minds. You've ever watched Criminal Minds and you see, I can't remember her name, but she's like this magician with the computer and she knows everything.
Oh, yeah.
That's what investigative analysts are. They are amazing. Now, they don't come across the same information that she portrays on the TV show, because there's a privacy issue with a lot of stuff, but they're the unsung heroes. They're in the background, and they're in the background, but they step forward and they hand you the platter, and you look in the platter and go, "Oh my God!"
Well, because you can't prove what I mean. Even if you have found something, you can't prove it until they verify it. I mean, they give you the proof to use to go identify the child, the grown up, to identify the perpetrator of the crime. I mean, those are the guys who give you the
nexus.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a nexus between the offense, the victim, and the perpetrator or the suspect in that case. Mm-hmm. And we, meaning the traditional law enforcement model, try to make that nexus through statements or statements that are incorrect or the old LLPOF adage, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Is that like the Sodi defense?
It's like the Sodi defense, yes. Some other dude did it. So the traditional law enforcement model is you do that through interviews, through process of interviews, and you either prove something happened or prove it didn't happen or prove what they said is not true. The analyst proves beyond a shadow of a doubt this occurred and there is a nexus between the victim and the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. And so they are the unsung heroes of missing persons cases.
Now, is it true that eyewitness information a lot of times is not very reliable or not accurate?
Eyewitness information is subject to the me bias. And the me bias is what I see confirms what I think. What I think confirms what I think I saw. And so and it also deals with background. Mm-hmm. So here's an example. I recall one time as a young police officer, a lady had her purse stolen from her while walking out of a supermarket. And she says to me, I said, "So can you tell me what he looked like?" And she said, "Absolutely, it was a boy."
That narrows it down.
Okay, so what makes you say that? She goes, "He was short." Okay, we're good. And you can see where we're going with this investigation. Yeah. This is not going well, and we're going to have a problem. Versus a woman who reported the same type of event at the same store 2 days later, telling me that he was wearing a New York Yankees ball jersey. He was 5'8". His hair was closely cropped on the sides but real long on the front and was down in front of his face. And he had a Pac-Man belt buckle on.
Boom.
Which makes me want to say, tell me more.
Yeah.
Why do you know about Pac-Man? And she says, "Oh, I have a 5-year-old son. He plays Pac-Man. And my husband loves the Yankees. And so, therefore, I'm supposed to love the Yankees." So a lot of the a lot of the problems that we have with eyewitness stuff, it depends on their orientation.
Right.
You know, what their background is and their ability to verbalize what they saw and the fact that they just went through a traumatic experience. Mm. You know, if you ask, my sister crashed my car one time and I said, how much damage was done to the car? And she goes, I don't know. Well, how long were you out there? About an hour. My goodness, you didn't see how much damage? No, I didn't. I didn't really see. So, eyewitnesses are great. Juries don't like eyewitnesses because of that.
Right.
Juries prefer, it's a CSI effect now. You know, as soon as CSI came out on TV,
yeah,
then all investigators throughout the world rolled their eyes and went, oh my God, now we're going to have proof beyond a living shadow of a doubt, no matter what. And it made us better. And so now we're using things like DNA, mitochondrial DNA, touch DNA, and those concepts that never been heard of or thought of during the 70s and 80s.
Wow. Well, and so the spoiler alert, in the future, at some point, we're going to talk about no-body homicides, since that is your field of expertise. And you see those on TV sometimes. You know, they're going to prosecute somebody for a crime when they don't have anything. But mm-hmm. I'm super curious how that works. But we won't.
I can give you 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay. Imagine this.
Would you believe?
Yeah. I remember that cartoon. So there's a lot of talk about circumstantial versus real evidence. And circumstantial evidence is placed on a lower rung of the ladder than real evidence. And yet we deal with circumstantial evidence every day. If it's raining outside, you look outside, you go, it's raining.
You don't really need to go out and
nobody
get in
had
it.
To prove to you that it's raining. So I offer you this. If you wake up in the morning and there's snow on the ground, then circumstantially, your brain says, it snowed. Now, is there a possibility that a movie production company came into your town and coated everything with snow throughout the night, and now there's snow every place in the ground? Maybe. But is that reality?
Yeah.
And so with no-body homicide cases, if there is a known suspect and your victim was last seen with your suspect and that victim no longer exists, either on paper, DMV records, nobody's seen him or her, no longer exists, then when that's produced to the jury, then the jury looks at the other attorney and says, what's your explanation? So the explanation has to be that victim is still alive, but we don't know where they are, or Sody.
Mm-hmm.
Some other dude did it.
Yeah.
And as soon as they claim Sody, then the jury's going to want to say or want to hear, who is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So if it was another guy, tell me, who is it? If you can't tell me who is it, then we need to talk about the guy who's sitting next to you at the table. So that's the basic premise of no-body homicide cases, is that there are those cases, they're few and far between, that we will go ahead and push forward.
You have enough.
And yes, and go ahead and push forward and let the jury make that decision as to whether or not they think he's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And by doing so, that circumstantial evidence layer that we always felt was down here comes back even with eyewitness or real evidence case. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of no-body homicide cases.
It's kind of great because you think, all right, that takes away there is the perfect crime, right? The perfect crime is you never find the body, and it's like, well, that's not the perfect crime. If you have people who are really dogged at being able to prove that, you know, you were last holding the string.
Enough pieces that all point in the same direction.
And I will tell you that nationwide we're looking at right around 87% conviction rate.
Of the no-body homicide?
No-body homicide cases.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Wow.
87, which is high. Really,
that's
really
huge.
High. Because you have the ambiguity of humans on the jury. So you can have one jury member say, you know, I'm not too sure. I don't feel comfortable convicting on something like this. But 87% is really high. Now, it takes a really qualified expert to put a case on like that.
Sure.
And we got them in Shasta County.
Yeah?
We got them.
So they can roll those kind of cases?
They can roll those kind of cases. And they are super, super talented, and they know their stuff. And they will take a case on in a minute that has those prescriptives in it that allows us to go forward with a no-body case.
Interesting.
Well, it's like when people disappear, a woman disappears, and she has kids, and kids were everything in her life, and the story is she took off and left the kids and never seen again. Not probable.
Foul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not likely.
Yeah, you hear that stuff, and you go, well, that's not a thing.
You've heard of Occam's razor.
Yes.
Occam's razor. The explanation, whatever is the easiest explanation.
Yep.
Among all the other explanations, is probably the one that works,
right.
One that fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't need to invent some convoluted thing that's.
No.
Yeah. So, all right. So we haven't looked at, all right, on my list. What's on your list, Bill?
Oh, I got a lot.
Paul, what's on your list? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I'm looking at, and we've got like, like a half a minute. So you want to tell them what we're going to talk about when we come back?
When we come back, we're going to talk about the four areas that NCMEC, specifically Team Adam, concentrates on, including endangered runaways, long-term missing, family abductions, and infant abductions. And we'll do just a brief introduction in each of those categories real fast.
Infant abductions, those people, we've got a special place for them, I think.
I know.
We have a special place for all these people, don't we? Yes. Well, we'll ponder that while we listen to the news, where we have more specialness coming, I'm sure. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Switched it up on you.
Break me down and build me up, whatever it takes.